Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff? Only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk. Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Junk Refund Show. It is my, as I say every week at the beginning of the show, it's my favorite time of the week. Thursdays at 3, and I just love how that rolls off your tongue. Thursdays at 3, Eastern time for the Junk Refund Show, where we try to teach people how to get the junk not only out of their living rooms and their garages, but also out of their life. And I am thrilled today to have one of the classiest guys on the planet that I have known for probably at least 30 years. This guy, honestly, bottom line, is the big brother that I never had. And he and his wonderful family have loved me, my family, for decades, and are just simply some of the finest people on the planet. And his name is Robert Parsons, and I just think the world of this guy. And this guy goes around the world doing a bunch of good for a bunch of people and a lot of things. But one of the other things that he finds time to do is birdwatch. And he is a fascinating, adventuresome guy. So, Robert, I just want to make sure you can hear me okay.
I sure can, Alan, and that's a very kind and unnecessary introduction, but thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hey, tell me, we're going to have Robert for about 20 minutes, and then he's got another appointment he's got to run to, so we're going to let him kind of take over the show a little bit here, and I'm just going to throw a few questions at him. I am just curious, Robert, what is the scientific or formal name for bird watching? It's probably something besides bird watching.
Well, that's a great question, and there's kind of two ways of looking at it, Alan. On the one hand, there are what you might call the scientists, the people that do very detailed scientific studies of birds, who examine wing patterns, flight patterns, migration patterns, all of that kind of stuff. And they'd probably be called ornithologists. And then there are other people that have various graduate degrees, doctorate degrees, and master degrees in varying scientific areas, who do a lot of study of birds. But those of us that go around and just watch birds and try to find birds and just enjoy what absolutely marvelous creatures they are, we probably call ourselves bird watchers, or as you get a little bit more serious, we kind of shorten it to birders, or going birding. So if you hear somebody say, I'm a birder, they're probably pretty into this. If you hear somebody say, I like watching birds, I'm a bird watcher, it might be a little bit more casual.
How did you get started with it?
Well, that's a fascinating story. We would probably don't have time on your show this week or next to go through the whole thing, but let me give you just a quick rundown. When I was growing up, I grew up in central Utah. My dad loved to go birding, or he loved to watch birds. And he got involved because at that time, many years ago now, of course, to earn your Eagle Scout merit badge, I mean to earn your Eagle Scout award, you had to earn the bird watching merit badge. It was one of the required merit badges back then. And so he wanted to be an Eagle Scout. So he went out and he started watching birds, and he met the requirements. And as a quick side note, a number of years later, they removed that requirement for Eagle Scout because it was just too hard of a merit badge to get. And too many scouts were not becoming Eagles because they didn't get that merit badge. But putting that aside, my dad would take me out in the deserts, and we would find hawks and eagles and different birds out there. And I kind of remember that growing up. And that's when I was kind of 8 years old to maybe 12 or 14 years old. I remember my dad, and we would be driving along in our old station wagon. And back in those days, seatbelts didn't exist. And suddenly he slammed the brakes on. The whole car would shudder and come to a stop. And he'd say, "I see a bird." And he'd jump out of the car and try to identify the bird he saw on the side of the road. So that's kind of how I grew up. After I graduated from college and moved away, I stopped watching birds. And even though I always kind of liked birds, I didn't really do anything seriously at all. On my 50th birthday, I was in Costa Rica with some dear friends, and we were walking around, and we saw this beautiful colored bird, and I don't even know what kind it was, and I wish I could remember, but it just grabbed me, and I looked at it, and I thought, you know, my dad would love to come to a place like this to go bird watching. Because he had never really been able to travel much and never really been able to go birding outside the United States. And he was getting older at that point. I was 50 years old. And so when I got home from Costa Rica, I called him up and I said, "Dad, you know what? You and I are going on a birding trip every 3 months right now. And we're going to places you've never been before." So that's what we started to do. I did some research. I found out some great places to go birding in the United States, like a place called Dry Tortugas off of Florida, or Southern Texas, or Southern Arizona. And we went out, and I took my dad with me. And then we went to Costa Rica and started going internationally. And it was just such a marvelous experience to really reconnect with my dad on something that he loved. But, Alan, the other thing that happened then is I just got massively hooked on it. And as my wife, Marianne, would say, we went hook, line, and sinker. And I went, she said, way overboard. And at that point, I took it really seriously, and I just started traveling. I started keeping a list. I started keeping track of all the birds I'd seen. And that was 18 years ago, and it hasn't stopped since.
That's brilliant. And you, this idea to do this with your dad every 3 months, I mean, what a great idea. And what a brilliant idea to do that. How many species, if that's the right word, how many species of birds are there?
Well, that's a good question. And honestly, nobody knows exactly. There are also some disagreements on how many species of birds there are. There are two major groups in the world that kind of, I guess what you would say, have jurisdiction over the naming of birds and how many species there are. Both of them are right around 11,000 species of birds in the world. One of them has about 1,000 more species, or maybe it's less than that now. They're trying to work together and trying to narrow the differences. But there's around 11,000 species of birds in the world. You know, if you want to look at it, one way that's kind of interesting is in the United States, there's maybe 900 species of birds.
Wow.
And in the world, let's call it 11,000. If you take a country like Colombia, there's about 1,900 species in the country of Colombia, which is the size of some of the states in the United States. So, you know, that might just kind of put it in perspective for you a little bit. These two groups I talked about, they are the ones that kind of decide officially is a bird a species or not. It used to be based on, will a bird, intermate with another bird? And if they did, it's the same species. If they didn't, they wouldn't. It's now become a lot more complex than that, and it's primarily driven by DNA. But people look at the voices, differences, obviously colorations and patterns, and then whether they would interbreed with another species of birds. And then they do a lot of this work now on DNA. Every year, there are what we birders call lumps and splits. A lump is when they take two species that they previously called independent species and said, no, we really weren't right. We've changed our mind. These two species are now really one species, and they lump the two together. And splits are the opposite. It's where they take a species that they say, hey, this was a single species, but they said, no, I think these really are separate species now, and they separate them apart.
So let me ask you this. In your dad's life, approximately how many species did he see before? I know it was a number of years ago that he passed away, a wonderful man that I knew personally myself. And how many species do you think that he saw in his life?
Probably around 1,500 species. And that includes the trips that we took internationally with him.
How many species have you seen?
Well, like I said, I've probably gone overboard a little bit. Let me answer that question by telling you that when I started birding, as I had mentioned, I was 50 years old. It was on my 50th birthday I started.
Great idea.
I decided that I would set some goals. As you know, you know me, I'm very goal-oriented, and I like to keep track of things, and I keep lists and all that stuff. So I set a series of goals all related to starting birding on my 50th birthday. My first goal was to see 50% of all the birds in the world. That's a pretty big, tall order of a goal. Then I set a goal to see 50 birds in 50 different countries. Then I set a goal to see 50 birds in each of the 50 states in the United States. And finally, the goal I set was to see 50 birds in each of the counties in which, at the time I lived in Maryland, so in Maryland, but now we've moved to Utah, so now in Utah. So those were the goals that I set. I just got back from a trip to the Lesser Antilles. And while I was there, I saw a very rare bird called the Grenada dove. To some people, it would look like a pigeon or a rock dove, as it's more formally called. But this is a beautiful pigeon that only lives in one small section of one small island in the Caribbean. It's the only place that can be found in the world. And there are less than... They don't know exactly how many, but because they can't tell for sure, but there are less than 300 of these birds left in the world. That bird was the 4,900th bird that I'd ever seen since I started keeping track on my birthday. So since then, I've seen a couple more, so I'm at 4,902 right now.
That's fabulous. And you started... fresh and clean at age 50, right? Did you start over?
I did.
Okay, I'm going to start. What a brilliant idea.
I just said, you know what? I'm not going to go back and try to remember all those things. Even though I had some notes, I said, I'm starting over from scratch.
How do you document each new species that you see? Do you take a picture of it? Do you just write it down in your list? What do you do?
Well, birding is very much on the honor system. There's nobody that really like double checks everything. Although if somebody, is just kind of making stuff up, you can, it's like golfing, if you go golfing with somebody, they tell you that they shot a 72, but you've been with them a bunch of times and they never shot below 100, that's probably not right.
Yeah.
But the way I do it is like most birders, we keep lists. And in today's world, a lot of this is now electronic. So there are a number of different programs out there. The one that I use and the one that is now the most commonly used program in the world is one that is set up by Cornell University, which, by the way, is the leading university in the world when it comes to ornithology and birds. And it's called eBird. And their program allows you to keep track of all the birds that you see and allows you to do a lot of really neat things with it. I can tell you how many different species of birds I've seen in any county or state in the world by year, very quickly. And so that's how I do it. So we document it on that. Photographing birds is a whole nother thing. And I've just kind of got into that recently. But it's hard enough to see a lot of these birds sometimes, let alone try to get a picture of them. So I've started doing that a little bit, but my main documentation is through this program called eBird.
That's fabulous. Now, we've only got like 4 or 5 minutes left before you got to run, and I really appreciate your time. I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, sometimes somebody, I think there was a situation in Ohio where somebody spotted a bird, a rare bird or something. You got word of it in Maryland, and I think them almost immediately took off for Ohio to go see this rare bird. And does that make sense? Have I got it correct, or have I goofed it up?
No, that's very accurate. In fact, it's probably understating how it actually works in a lot of cases. So it depends on the birder. Those people that really are going to go after rare birds like that, you know, sometimes we call them chasers. I mean, they'll try to chase down a bird. And a lot of it has to do with how you're keeping track or how you're looking at it. For example, you might have a bird in Maryland, where you are, that is pretty common in Texas, but doesn't come to Maryland very often. For instance, when we lived in Maryland, and you know where we lived, we had a flycatcher that I found out in our neighborhood that is very rare in Maryland. Only has been there a couple of times in history. But it's very common in southern Texas. But when I told people about it, you know, within hours, we had 50 or 100 people that had driven from parts of Maryland to try to come and see this bird. And then it just expands from there. So if you have a very rare bird in the United States that has never been in the United States before or only once or twice, you will have a lot of people that will try and go see this bird. I've done that. And then you might have the same situation for your county. You know, if you live in Montgomery County in Maryland, maybe it's a bird that's very rare in Montgomery County, but much more common, out by Annapolis. And people will chase that to try to see that bird on their list. In the old days, they had what they called, before cell phones, what they called the hotlines. And these were simply a number that you called into, and somebody would update it regularly and would list the rare birds. So you'd call this up, and it would say, you know, this bird is rare, and here's where it is, kind of a thing, so that people would know. Nowadays, with all of the electronic conveniences we have, it's all done through text messaging or emails, that kind of stuff. And so it's much, much easier to know about a rare bird today than it was in the past. I have chased a lot of birds. I don't always do it. It kind of depends. Sometimes you're working, you can't. But for instance, there was an ivory gull, which is a rare gull that's usually only found up in the Arctic. It's an all just brilliant snow white bird. And it had come down, I believe it was into the Michigan area, but up just south of the Canadian border. And I heard about it, got in the car, drove all night, got up there. We found the bird early in the morning, and I drove back just in time to celebrate New Year's Eve with my family.
Beautiful. You're You're a man after my own heart. That's beautiful stuff. Let me ask you one last. I think this
sure.
is fast.
I got a couple more minutes if we need it.
That's great. Two things, really. Tell everybody about how this hobby is spreading in not only your marriage, but also down the lines in your family. Your dad would be proud of this because it's carrying on to future generations. And then the last thing, I just want you to, bottom line, tell everybody what has it done for your life that means the most to you?
That's a great question. Let me go back to your first question. It's interesting because everyone in my family is obviously much more aware and focused on birds now than they ever used to be. If you ask my wife Marianne, she would say all anybody in the family has to do when we're together, we're traveling, we're walking, we're at a park, all somebody has to do is say bird, and immediately I'll spin around, they'll have my attention, and sometimes they do it just as a joke for fun. So it's brought a whole new kind of awareness to our family. Everyone in my family to some extent or another is interested in birds. Our oldest daughter, Rebecca, who I believe you knew, yes. For instance, loved hummingbirds. And when we went down to Dominican Republic, I believe, or Jamaica, it was Jamaica, I think, and we took all of our married children with us, we went to a place where the hummingbirds were very tame, because they were used to people. And they gave you these little feeders, like a little thimble that you could hold. And the hummingbirds would come and land on your finger and drink out of these little thimbles of sugar water. And yes. And Becca just loved that. She just couldn't get over it. For Christmas last year, our children and their spouses gave me a T-shirt, and on the T-shirt there are 12 birds pictured, and each one is the bird that one of our children or their spouses remembers having an experience with me about.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
So it was a very sweet gift, and they wrote a note and talked about the experience that we had had with each one of them. Two of my son-in-laws have taken up birding and love to go, one of them quite seriously. And he's been birding in Mexico, in India, you know, in Costa Rica, as well as all throughout the United States with us. And a couple of my sons have now gotten quite interested in it. So it's done a lot for our family, and none of them are quite as dedicated as I am, or as crazy as I am, as some people would say, but they all have gotten a much greater appreciation of birds and enjoy them, and we talk about them all the time. They're part of all of our family activities one way or another. Your last question is a good question, and that is, what has birding really done for me? As you know, I had a pretty intense career, lots of travel, which, by the way, ended up being good for birding because I was lots of different places. But intense, you know, lots of meetings, pressure, you know, a lot of things that had to get done. And then I was quite involved in the community and in our church, and had a fairly hectic, busy life. Birding has been able to give me isolation at times that it's been needed, and allowed me to just reflect and to think. The one thing about birding is it's always better, 99% of the time, it's better to go early in the morning. And I love getting up early in the morning, and it's quieter in the morning. birding is outside. Birding is often in places where there are fewer people. And so it allows you to get out there and to kind of disconnect. I've been to a lot of very rare places all throughout the middle of like Papua New Guinea or Borneo, Malaysia. There's no cell phones. In fact, there's no electricity. In fact, there's no running water. And so these places have put you in situations where you really can disconnect. Now, you don't have to do all those remote places to be a birder, but I have done a lot of those. You can go up the canyon, but it allows you to get out, to be alone, or to be with just a couple of people, to reflect, to think, to enjoy nature. And it's brought a peace to my life and an ability to just kind of disconnect from the what otherwise was a pretty hectic day-to-day existence.
That's a great answer. I'm going to throw two more questions real fast at you. Number one, if somebody wants to follow your adventures, how do they do that? Do they follow you on Instagram, or where's the best place for them to get a view of what your next adventure is?
That's a good question, because I don't do a lot of posting about our birding trips. I do a little bit on Instagram. But I really don't. I think that there's lots of people that do, though. But my advice to people would be to just go do it. Honestly, it takes very little to initially get into birding in terms of money, equipment, time. You can go birding anywhere. You can go birding without even binoculars, although binoculars certainly help a lot. You can just watch birds. You can use bird feeders in your yards. I would suggest that people take a little time and go over this eBird website that I talked about. There is also another app that people might be interested in called Merlin. Merlin is designed a little bit more for people who are starting birding, but I still use it a lot. And it has different levels of capabilities. But it will tell you and give you a little picture of all the birds that are likely to be seen in whatever area you are, in your neighborhood, when you're traveling, in a foreign country, anywhere in the world. But if you tell it where you are, just by hitting location, it will say, here are the likely birds that you could see in this area. Now, you're never going to see even half of those without seriously going after them. But at least it gives you a feel for the birds in that area. There's another aspect to the app that is designed to help beginning birders identify birds. So it will ask you four questions, just four questions. And will then give you a list of six to eight birds that you might likely have seen. It will ask you, is the bird on the ground or in a tree? It'll ask you what the color, the basic colors are, mostly brown, red, orange, red and orange, whatever it is. And just four questions, and then it will come back and say, here are five birds that it might be, and it gives you little pictures, and you can match that up with what you thought you saw. Those are all good ways to start. You can buy a pair of binoculars for just a few hundred dollars that are plenty good enough to get started. And then if you get, dragged into it like me, you're going to spend more money and get better quality. But just start somewhere.
All right, here's my last question for you. This is just fascinating to me. What do you say to somebody who says to themselves, and this is, I think, pretty common, oh, crap, I'm turning 50 this year. What do you say to them to help them understand that it could be a monumental beginning of a lifelong hobby like you did, as opposed to somebody getting discouraged because they just got a year older?
Well, I've actually had that happen to me a couple of times, where people have said, I'm too old to get started now. And I told them the story that I shared with you earlier and just encouraged them not to necessarily get as involved as I did, because you don't have to do that, But just try it out. Just spend a little time and see if you like it. Birds are absolutely amazing. I mean, do you know there are birds that will fly for weeks and weeks on end without ever landing? There are birds that migrate from the Arctic to the Antarctic and then back to the Arctic every single year. Little hummingbirds fly completely across the Gulf of Mexico nonstop. And if they had to land on the water, they would die because they can't get up again. So they have to make it all the way. Another fun thing for people might do, hey, I'll just throw this out at the end. The running joke in our family is that my favorite movie, and it's not my favorite movie, but it's up there, is the movie called A Big Year. It's a comedy, but it's actually based on a true story. And although they took a little liberty with it and a few things in there aren't actually correct as it relates to the birds, for the most part, it's a true story of what happened. The big year is something that very few birders do. I've never done it. I have not been in the position to it, but I dreamed about it a little bit. But now I don't think it'll ever really happen for me. But that's where you go out starting January 1st, and you bird every single day to see how many species of birds you can find by December 31st. People do a big year in their state. People do a big year in the United States. And a few people do a big year in the world, where they literally travel the world for an entire year nonstop, trying to see how many species of birds they can find. There's a couple of fascinating books out there about about people that have done this. But just watch the movie, The Big Year. And The Big Year is a movie about three birders going after a big year in the United States and kind of some of the experiences they have. I think you'll like it.
That's a great suggestion. Thank you so much. This has been just really fun, and I can't thank you enough for your time. I know you're a busy guy, and thanks for everything you've always done for me and my family. He's simply one of the best on the planet, folks, all things considered. And he's, frankly, one of the happiest guys on the planet. And
well,
a example of getting a hobby and running with it and having fun with it, and it just makes your life an adventure.
Well, Alan, you won't forget. I just remembered this, but in your business, as you go out and as you help people straighten up and clean up and declutter their life and haul away things that they no longer need, you've got a very unique model where you'll also sometimes find things that have value still and can be sold.
Right.
But I'll never forget that one of the things you found in one of your jobs was a very classic book, a big coffee table top book, and
yes,
it was called Audubon's Birds of America.
Right.
Audubon was one of the pioneers of birds, and he painted these magnificent paintings of hundreds of the birds that were in the United States at the time. There are another fabulous birders named Roger Troy Peterson. He wrote some of the very first field guides for birding in the United States. And he put a number, hundreds of these paintings in a book. And I'll always appreciate how when you found one of those books in one of your jobs, you recognized how that would have meaning and value to me. And the first thing I knew about it was a big package that showed up on our porch, where you'd send it to me as a nice gift. So thank you very much for that. We'll always appreciate it.
I will continue to do it. One of those came from an estate in Connecticut, so we'll keep an eye out for you. I just love doing
it.
It's fun to do. Thank you so much.
God bless you
for taking the time, and it's been a joy to have you on the show.
All right. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
You're welcome, Robert. Have a great day.
Thank
folks,
you.
Folks, we're gonna take a break. We'll be back in about a minute, and we'll talk some more about what makes life so great in the junk removal industry, and maybe a few stories about birds, but we'll see what we can do. We'll be back in just a minute on the Junk Refund Show.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show, folks. This is Alan Cook coming to you from Bethesda, Maryland, where I just had a blast for 30 minutes talking to my good buddy Robert Parsons, whom I've known for at least 30 years. I could spend the rest of the show just easily talking to you about all the cool things that he does and what his family does. He's one of my customers. I've helped him, you know, haul stuff away from his homes and other places. He's, like I said in the top of the show, he's kind of the big brother that I never had. And it gave me a chance to see what having a dynamite big brother would be like. He's just that wonderful. His wonderful wife, Marianne, for many, many years, every Christmas, she makes the most incredible sweet rolls. They're kind of a caramelized sweet roll, so to speak. And every year for Christmas, they would bring us, you know, a little batch of these beautiful sweet rolls, so much so that I loved them that I got the recipe from her and started making them myself a little bit at Christmas time because they were just so good. But one of the great things about Robert is that he enjoys life so much, and he enjoys family so much. He's very grounded. He's very well-centered on the stuff that's most important. And then he just goes out on a regular basis and he does it. We didn't really have time today to talk about some of his recent adventures, but I believe he was in Brazil for 3 weeks, birding recently, having a great time. I think his wife, Marianne, has seen over 500 species of birds herself. I asked him for a couple of photos that I could post on Facebook to just talk about stuff, and he sent me some photos from Nepal and from Brazil and from a couple other places, which he probably went to in the last 60 days, okay? So Robert is, you know, close to 70, maybe 70 now, somewhere in that ballpark. And this guy's, he's going to go for another 20 or 30 years, nonstop. It's just what he does. He and his wife are volunteering for our church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They are headed to Poland in July, not on a birding expedition, but for a year and a half to do volunteer missionary work over in Poland. I mean, it's nonstop. And one of my good friends, a guy named Richard Burton, who's a good friend of both Robert's and mine, summed it up really well one day when he told me that Robert Parsons is not one to let a lot of moss grow under his feet. It's just the way he is, and he has such a great time with life. And one of the reasons I do this show is to teach people not only how to get the junk out of your homes, but how to get it out of your life as well. And I'm not a big fan of, I'm 65, and I'm not a big fan of the word old. I don't use it much. I don't think about it much. I don't hate it, but it's not one of my favorite words. It's kind of irrelevant to me. You know, life, it doesn't matter how many years you've been on the planet. What matters is, are you happy and are you having fun? And one of my heroes, I wish I could remember her name, is a lady from North Carolina who goes out to San Diego, and this was a few years ago. I hope she's still with us, and I hope she still does this, but she would go out to San Diego. She lost her husband, I'm going to just kind of, about 20 years ago, something like that. and decided to start running. And so she ran a little bit, and then she ran a little bit more, and then she ran a little bit more. Well, one thing leads to another, and pretty soon she's running marathons. And so she would go out to San Diego and run in the, I think it's called the Rock and Roll Marathon every year out there. And she was the star of the race. She set a world record in the women's 90 and over marathon time of 7.5 hours. And her wonderful son, who is probably, what, in his 60s, goes out and runs it with her to make sure she's okay. She is a rock star at the Rock and Roll Marathon. And you should Google North Carolina lady, 90-year-old marathon runner, and you'll see who I'm talking about. I think she started running at age 76. So that's my point. You get one shot at life. That's all you get. I mean, I'm sorry, but you don't come back and get another shot at it. You get one shot at life. They give you one body, and nobody knows for sure how long you're going to be on the planet. But as long as you're here, make it an adventure. That's my, you know, that's what it's all about. You're here to enjoy this experience. So make it an adventure. Look at Robert, at the age of 50, who had seen, I'm sure, hundreds of species of birds by then, who not only says, okay, I'm going to go out and go bird watching, but I'm going to do it with my dad every 3 months. Now, think about that. That is a brilliant idea to build a relationship with your dad. And I think his wonderful dad, by the same name, by the way, lived to be about 90 years old, if I remember right. So I think he had somewhere around 15 to 20 years of experiences birding with his dad that are priceless to him. I mean, how many of us every 3 months, you know, go to dinner with your dad or mom or what, brother or whatever, some family member? Here's a guy who traveled the world with him and went birding, and the adventures that they had are priceless, I'm sure. I just think that's such a marvelous way to go through life. And it doesn't matter how old you are. I think they said Colonel Sanders started Kentucky Fried Chicken when he was 65. And I think our friend Ray Kroc got involved in McDonald's, I think started working on that one when he was about 56. So who in the world cares how old you are? It's irrelevant. What's relevant is, what are you doing with your life? And are you having fun? And isn't it an adventure? And the great thing about life is that you get to choose what you want to do. You know, I mean, here's a guy who at age 50 said, okay, I'm going to try to see 50% of all the birds in the world. He's at 4,902 species of birds, and when he hits about 5,500, he's legitimately seen half the birds in the world. The last time that I kind of checked in on him years ago, he had seen about 3,000. So here's a guy who's having a wonderful adventure and has the means because of his career to travel around the world and do some fun stuff, and more power to him. And I tell people, you know, I say the world's a really small place. It just is these days. He talked about all these different countries he's been to. I got a call last night from Scottsdale, Arizona. And people said, can you come clean out a house for us? I said, sure, when? He said, it's got to be done next week. I went, sure, no problem. So I'm off to Scottsdale. And, you know, we go all over the country doing this, and I do keep an eye out. If I see a book of some type that is an unusually cool birding-type book, I send it to Robert. That's what I do. And I think, and this would be a fun thing to Google, I think one of the most expensive books in the world ever sold was a very large birding book, which I forget what it was called, Birds of America or something. But, I mean, it sold for millions of dollars. I Googled it and looked it up. And I just, you know, it just makes life really fun. And for a guy who travels around the world seeing birds and looking at them and all the cool stuff that he does, one of the things that I can do to add to his adventure is just keep an eye out of all the libraries we clean out. Keep an eye out for some kind of birding book that looks unique, old, and ideally big. But any of the birding books that I come across, I just remember Robert, and I just try to make a note to grab him and shoot him out to him, and more power to him in his birding adventures. So one of the themes for the show today is to create your own adventure and don't be afraid to start. Like he said, just start. One of the problems people have in getting things going that they really want to do, maybe it's a book they want to write, maybe it's a radio show they want to do, maybe it's what, I don't know, become a birder, whatever it is, you don't have to have, just like Robert said, you don't have to have the expensive pair of binoculars. You don't have to have been on a DJ on your high school radio, you know, program. You don't have to have the most expensive equipment. You don't have to have experience. I started my first radio show on CBS, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, something like that. I had no radio experience, none. I had never done a radio show. They invited me in to a station here in Washington, D.C. to let me sit in on someone else's radio show to just see how they did it. The show that I sat in on was done by a mortgage lender. And within 3 minutes of starting the show, the guy is talking about the Bible and quoting scriptures. And I'm going, huh, this isn't mortgage lending, but I guess CBS lets you quote scriptures and the Bible on your radio show. I mean, you pay for the time to have a show, right? But I guess that's what they let you do. And I just sat there kind of stunned, realizing that it's kind of an open book in a lot of ways, and you get to talk about whatever you're excited about and whatever you think would be helpful to people. And a couple of weeks later, they put me in there, and I had an hour. They put a microphone in front of me, and they said, okay, you're on. And for 47 minutes, factoring in the commercial times, I don't even remember what I talked about the first radio show. But the point is, don't wait for all the ducks to be lined up in a row before you jump in the pool. Just jump in the pool. And that's how you learn to swim. And it's the people that just tend to jump in and get started that rapidly become viewed as experts by other people. And they may not be experts. They just jumped in and got started. Look at Robert. He decides at age 50 to start with a clean slate as though he'd seen no birds. And he set goals, and they all had to do with 50. I would bet you that when Robert's 90 and you go to him and you say, what was your most memorable birthday in your life? Probably without hesitation, he'll say my 50th. Because he did something that year that changed his life and added to his life. That's what makes birthdays so great. You get to celebrate you. It's the one day of the year that you get to celebrate you and what you like to do and what you're all about. And your story is just as good as anybody else's story. So remember the lady who's the rock star at the rock and roll, you know, marathon in San Diego, because she's out there running it when she's 91. And remember the Robert Parsons of the world, who this guy is on an adventure, and it spreads to his family and his spouse and his kids and grandkids. And, you know, he can talk about a lot of other stuff that he's pumped about and fun stuff that he does besides birding. But birding is kind of his thing that he loves to do, and he's done it for some 20 years now. And I just think it's fascinating. So whatever it is, whatever turns you on, whatever gets you excited, jump in and get going and set some goals and go after it. The worst thing in the world you can do in life is live with regrets. You know, you just don't want to look back on your life and go, oh, crap, I wish I would have, dot, 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 right? And don't worry about your age. Don't worry about your experience. Just don't worry about any of that stuff. Just go get started, okay? So I'm going to take another break here for about a minute, just a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back for the last 8 or 9 minutes, finish up with some more stuff on the Junk Refund Show. And I'm just having a blast learning about this stuff that my good friend does and the lessons that it has for the rest of us. So hang tight for about a minute. We'll be right back on the Junk Refund Show. This is your host, Alan Cook.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. I'm just chatting with Doug, our producer here, during the break about some stuff that's happened. Let me just give you some junk removal thoughts here, because this is a junk removal show. I think it's probably the longest running one, because I don't know anybody else has spotted doing this. I don't know, but I'm having a blast with it. We have a great time here. There are a couple things you should just remember. Number one, if you're in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, if you call in during the show, Thursdays between 3 and 4 o'clock Eastern Time, 888-627-6008. If you call that number, just leave your name and number. You won't be on the show. Just leave your name and number. The producers will call me afterwards and give me your name and number, and I will then get a hold of you and send you a link that is a special radio show voucher that gives you the right to have a pickup truck of junk removal done for $79 instead of what's normally $229. We do a lot of work with Groupon. We have 470-plus reviews on Groupon.com. I invite you to go read them. Look up 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, 97% customer satisfaction rating. The Groupon folks tell me that is the highest in the country in the junk removal business, and it's one of the highest satisfaction ratings of any business. I guess with Groupon, if you hit somewhere around 90% customer satisfaction rating, which on a scale of 5 is a 4.5, right? That's how they use their scale. Our score, I think, is like 4.82 or something like that. It translates into a 90% approval rating if you're one of the best in the country in your industry. We're at 97. And I keep hoping we can get to 98, because then I can go to Geico and say, hey, we're 1% better than you guys. I was kind of cocky about that, but anyway, that would be kind of fun. Anyway, check it out. Read the reviews, and you'll get a good sense of what we do. And the Groupon rate, if you buy this same pickup truckload of stuff, it's $99. Call into the radio show, and it's $79. Even better, right? So some of the latest things going on. Here's a little tip. One of the things we want to try to help people do when they listen in on the show is declutter your life. So in that regard, today's project is kind of simple. Go to the cabinet under your kitchen sink. Open up the cabinet. Pull everything out that's on the shelf. Put it on the kitchen floor. Grab a cloth or a wipe of some kind and just wipe out the bottom shelf of that area so it's clean. Then look at all the stuff that's in front of your that's on your kitchen floor. Look for stuff that automatically is junk and should be tossed or recycled. Look for duplicates. Like if you have one bottle of Dove dishwashing liquid and it's halfway full, and you got another bottle of Dove dishwashing liquid, exact same, you know, brand, model, whatever, and it's a quarter of the way full, put them together in one bottle and then recycle the other plastic bottle. So get rid of duplicates. Just kind of organize the stuff. And then ask yourself, if of that stuff that you pulled out under your kitchen sink and you can't remember the last time you used it, you're probably safe in just getting rid of it and tossing it. And just kind of sort out and try to get rid of, you know, 10 to 20% of the stuff that's under there. And then put the stuff that you absolutely have to have back in on a nice clean shelf, organize it how you want to, get rid of the old stuff, and then send me an email to junkrefund@gmail.com and tell me how much it helped you or something. Take a picture of it before and after and put it on Facebook and show people what you did today to declutter your area. But this week, a little project, the area under your sink, that little cupboard or whatever, cabinet, I guess is a better word, just clean it out in simple terms. Pull everything out of it. Wipe off the cabinet on the bottom so you got a clean shelf. Combine stuff that could be duplicated and get rid of the extra containers. Toss the stuff you don't need. And anything that you're looking at going, man, why is this here and when did we use it? I'm telling you, your life is going to go on just fine if you get rid of it. So get rid of it. So this week is clean out the area under the kitchen sink week, just because that's the one that I thought of on the radio show. You should also be aware we have available a declutter calendar for 2024. And what that means is it starts in April of 2024 and goes through March of 2025. So you get 12 months. One of our producers, Don, has one of those calendars and he loves it. Every day there's a new item on there, a little simple item that you can do that helps declutter your home, your life, your mind, etc., to help you have a happier, more solid life. So keep in mind the declutter calendar. It retails out there for about $60. If you come in through the radio show and make a request to get one, you save $10, you get it for $50, and you get 12 months of the calendar, and every day there's a little tip on there that helps you declutter your life and have a better life. And what we do is we ship it straight to you. It's printed up and shipped straight to you from our good friends at Vistaprint and anywhere in the United States, and we shoot it out to you. So if you want a declutter calendar, it's a great gift too. Contact the folks at the radio show, 888-888-627-6008. And they can send me your information and we'll contact you and get a declutter calendar out to you. We finished cleaning out just in the world of junk removal. You never know what you're going to get. I got this last week from cleaning out a house in Silver Spring, Maryland, my second motorcycle, which I'm adding to my collection. This is, I think it's like a Honda 250, something like that. It was parked out in front of a very nice home that was also a dental office in Silver Spring. And they said, you know, can you take the motorcycle too? And I always love to say yes to that one. So that motorcycle is in my storage unit. I now have two motorcycles in my junk removal career. I've actually had more than that. I've gotten in my hands, scooters and mopeds and cars and stuff like that. But this was kind of a fun one. A little 250 dirt bike that we picked up that we hauled away that we're going to see just what it needs and how fast we can get this baby running and go from there. So you never know what you're going to come across and what you're going to find, but it's always an adventure. And if you find a really big, cool birding book, you send that to Robert Parsons. If you find a motorcycle, you stick it in your storage unit. If you find jewelry, you take it to a jeweler and you sell it to them, especially if there's gold jewelry involved. And you can make more money in the palm of your hand with jewelry than you can make in a 12-foot box truck full of junk. So it's not always the amount of stuff. It's the value of the stuff that is critical. So my thanks again to my good buddy Robert Parsons for being on the show today, who has seen 4,902 species of birds and counting, for the great spirit he has to make your life an adventure. He's a perfect example of someone who is doing that day in and day out, and he is frankly one of the happiest guys that I've known for some 30 years. Thanks always to bbsradio.com, producers Doug and Don Newsom, for the great job that they do every week. And we will be back next week, Thursday at 3 Eastern time, on the Junk Refund Show on bbsradio.com. God bless. Have a great week. Get the junk out of your life and out of your homes, and call 1-800-JUNK-REFUND if you need any help doing that. I'm your host, Alan Cook. Have a great week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.